Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Last year, draft day, I sent Bean a text, said, Dalton Kincaid, that's all I said. You know, felt like that the draft day moment when Kevin Costner opens his thing and says Vontae Mack no matter what. It was Dalton Kincaid no matter what last year. So I'd like to think that I have some input in who we get to pick, but honestly, I really don't.
Josh Allen knowing his place in the broader hierarchy of the Buffalo Bills, although I continue to be a firm believer if you want your franchise quarterback to be essentially a member of management, you need to at least give him a seat at the table. You need to at least pretend to take his input, much like the way I pretend to take the input of Miles Simmons as to story ideas or other issues regarding the management of ProFootballTalk.com. Miles is back on a Friday morning. Miles, good morning. How's everything out there in my favorite city other than the city in which I live?
There you go. Los Angeles, baby. Yeah. Weather's been a little bit better than it was last week and last weekend specifically. It was horrible on Saturday as I was like, so I bought a new car and it was in Oakland. So yes. I had to fly up to Oakland and drive back down. And I got to tell you, Mike, driving through the mountains in pouring rain in a car that you're familiar with, but unfamiliar with, because while it's the same model of car that you've driven for the last however many years, it's newer. That was not fun. I wouldn't wish that on most people. So I'm glad that the weather is nicer today than it was last week.
I have a vague recollection of being in Los Angeles for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And it seems like a pretty large city. Yes, yes. An intense desire to leave from the moment the wheels touched down. However, I do seem to recall that there were a lot of cars in Los Angeles. So I would like to think that if a person were hoping to buy a car, they wouldn't have to go to Oakland or some other place that's 500 or more miles away from Los Angeles. There's a certain irony in that because there's cars everywhere. You can't find an acceptable motor carriage for yourself in LA, you got to go all the way to Oakland to get it. Are you kidding me?
Yes. Because listen, the late model GTIs, right? I mean, first of all, cars are too expensive right now in general. And you know, if you look at the GTIs that are new, and if you want to get a low mileage lease, I don't drive very much. So I was thinking of replacing my 2013 with a newer car. I was in a dealership a few weeks ago because I needed to get the car serviced. And then they're like, oh, we'll buy your car. And I was like, okay, well, for how much? And then they gave me a crappy quote because I'm one of those people who I look up cars all the time. I know what my car's value is. I knew what I had. So they like lowballed me on that. And it's like, okay, I understand what you're doing. But then they allowed me to test drive a new GTI because if I was going to get rid of my old GTI, I would have to get a new one. So when I did that, I was like, oh, this is nice. You know, this is way nicer. You get much more features. You know, you get the blind spot monitoring, Apple CarPlay, all these different things. Fine. So then they quoted me the prices on the new one, and I was like, absolutely bleeping not, because you guys are asking way too much money for this stupid car. No. So then I started looking up the latest generation, but before the previous generation, I should say, before the current Mark 8, the Mark 7.5, which I think is the best one they've ever made because it doesn't have all the screens. You know, you have buttons. Oh, yes, there it is. There's my beautiful new car. And that's what I found. It was in Oakland at 15,000 miles on it, man. Like, it's a 3-year-old car. Like, you can't really get that. So when I saw that, I was like, all right, well, that's something we have to do. And I would have been mad if I didn't get it. And yeah, so that's why I ended up in Oakland. I ended up driving home, and it is a beautiful new, not new, but beautiful 2021 black GTI Autobahn trim, the highest one they made. It's got your pano sunroof, your automatic climate control, your Fender premium audio system, your automatic climate control, baby. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
You could be like Larry David and go work in a dealership. You would know a hell of a lot more than he did if you just take up a side job selling cars. You're ready to sell. You're ready to move merchandise. Now, is the GTI, is that based on the Golf platform? Is that what the current GTI is? I recall vividly in the 80s, they had the Jetta GTI. They had the Scirocco GTI. I thought it was GTI. I think they had the GTI. I think it's GTI. I think GTI has been that three-letter acronym that I don't know what it means, but Volkswagen's been using it for years to separate the – this is the nice version. You could buy the crappy regular version, or you can spend more for the nice version. And it was all premised on, like, red and black and, the Jetta – I had a Jetta in 1988, before you were even born. I had a Jetta.
It was.
And it was moving toward the point where it wasn't quite as boxy. And the Scirocco, I thought, was always a great car. And now you see one of them, it's like, man, that really wasn't all that great. But yeah, I was always smitten by the GTI. As I texted you after I saw your post, I had a Volkswagen Beetle. I had a Jetta. I had a Touareg. And, I mean, I've had Volkswagens or Audis, pretty much every car I've ever had, with a few exceptions, including a crappy Ford Fairmont Futura. And apologies to our friends in Michigan who manufacture and otherwise work for and are supported financially by the success of the Ford Motor Company. The Ford Fairmont Futura was a piece of crap. And adding the word Futura did not rectify the fact that it was a piece of crap. That was the GTI equivalent for the Ford Fairmont. You can get the regular Fairmont, or you can get the Futura. And there really wasn't much of a difference other than it was like slightly more angular and less harsh. That was it. Other than that, it was a piece of crap. It used to catch on fire underneath. There was something that happened. There was some glitch with the carburetor or something, and it literally caught on fire a couple of times, which wasn't good.
Caught on fire? Wow, that actually sounds very bad. It's just not good. That's pretty bad. Yeah. No, I will say that about the Jetta, the GL, because my mom has one now. We are a Volkswagen family. We drive manual cars. That's what we do, you know? So that's part of why I say that. And no, I had to get my mom back into the Volkswagen after she had, gosh, what did she have before? I can't even remember off the top of my head, but she's had Acura. She's had a Mazda 3, so she could continue to drive stick. And so I kind of manipulated things a little bit. You know, we test drove one a couple years ago, and I started playing her favorite music. It was playing Chaka Khan as we got on the highway. And then she's like, oh my gosh, this is so great. This is a moment. And so, yeah, then I convinced her to get a Volkswagen GLI. But I got to turn to something that you texted me last night before we start talking about football. And I apologize if you were going to do something else, but this is what we need to talk about right now. Because you texted the PFT Rider text chain, why didn't anybody tell me about Dune? And, you know, I understand that you were goading me, but on March 22nd, you know, looking for a good movie to watch tonight. Any ideas?
And that was you.
This out publicly.
That was you.
Sorry. Yeah. See, hey, America, this
that was
is
four
when,
weeks
and
ago.
Those of us overseas.
That was four weeks ago.
All right. Fine. But you know what? I mean, you want to say this all the time. Like, why doesn't anybody tell me this? Why doesn't anybody tell me that? you guys have no idea how many texts this man ignores from me. And that was a tweet. And many people saw it. Okay. And you know, you all know that this guy spends so much of his time on Twitter or X or whatever the hell they want to call it. So, Yeah, right. So I did not have a very good reaction to when he then sent that to the PFT checks chain last night. Why didn't anybody tell me about Dune? I won't actually say what the reaction was because it was pretty funny and it's not appropriate to say on television. But of course, somebody told you about Dune. It was me. And I've been singing Dune's praises for weeks.
Okay. Noted. I do remember it now. You have refreshed my recollection, as the lawyers might say. I do remember now. And
you do recall.
It just wasn't, at the time I was looking for a movie to watch with my wife. And so that didn't even get close to the filter because I knew there was no way she was going to enjoy Dune. And I have vivid recollection of going to the theater in 1984 to see the original Dune, which was, and I started watching it again last night just out of curiosity, still is caca. I have a bad association with the entire Dune concept. But my son had recently been pointing out to me that he's watched it and it's actually pretty good. So from time to time, we will retreat down to the barn. We'll get a meal. We'll hang out. We'll watch a movie. And last night, we decided to watch Dune, even though he had seen it. We turned up the sound system in the barn. We got the big screen down there. And it was awesome. And I'm not big into sci-fi because I'm constantly looking for flaws because it's impossible to make real sci-fi. Like, you would have to have, and they do some of it where they speak a language that isn't known to mankind, but nobody's speaking English in some planet galaxies away. They're not speaking English there. And they're not walking off of the ship, and the atmosphere on every planet they happen to go to is completely breathable. So little things like that bother me. And here's what bothered me about Dune. They have all these exotic names, all these made-up names, and the main character's name is Paul. Like, was that intentional? Like, every other name is fancy and weird spelling, but the main guy, let's just call him Paul. You know, I'm sick of coming up with all these fancy names. Let's just call the main character Paul. That bothers me, too. But I'll say that, despite all those things, it is visually striking. The Thopter machine that's like the insect wings, that thing is amazing. I haven't been visually struck by a film in a very long time. So it was a great experience. And I wanted to just, because you can get Dune 2 now, and you know what happens is, for the first couple of weeks, you have to actually purchase it instead of rent it. So it's going to be purchased and it's going to be watched at some point soon. I wanted to just watch it again. I wanted to watch it after Dune last night. I mean, I was like, I was so riveted by it, I didn't want to like get up and get a drink or go get ice. Or I sat there the whole time. There was never a point where I was like, oh, this is kind of a lull. I thought the whole thing was great.
And wait until you see Dune 2, man. I mean, I'm telling you, yeah. That's gotta be your project this weekend. You know, I mean, I told you weeks ago to see it on the biggest screen you can while it was still in theaters. I guess it still is in some theaters. I saw it, I don't know, it was two Saturdays ago now because last Saturday I was doing something else, right? And which we just talked about. But yeah, I had to go see it again at the IMAX at Universal City Walk, whatever it's called. I should know what it's called because it's, you know, technically part of the company, the streaming platform we're on right now.
Yeah, but, well done. Well done.
Whoops. I don't go over there too often. It's in Studio City. It's kind of far away. But, you know, it was one of the more amazing movie experiences that I've ever had, and I'd seen it there before, and I'm like, well, it's still there. I gotta go see it again for a second time. So yeah, I'm telling you, man, you gotta do it.
The guy who drove 500 miles home in a new car thinks it's too far to go to the place that is owned by NBC Universal that you can't even name because it's a little far away in Greater Los Angeles. It's probably like five Universal miles. It takes 5 hours to get there.
It's the 15, and yes, it does basically take 5 hours to get there if you're going through traffic, which is why I went on a Saturday morning so that it would not.
My son is lobbying, like, let's go to Philly, let's go to D.C., and I found an IMAX theater in Pittsburgh, but Dune 2 isn't playing there. Come on, IMAX theater in Pittsburgh, you let me down. And it's like, you know, Alex, it's kind of a tough week to get in a car and drive 4 or 5 hours each way to watch a movie. I kind of have other things I got to do this weekend because you know, sometimes your job gets in the way of your attempt to take in good cinema. Oh, and before I pivot to football, the reason why we're here, your mother, Dr. Simmons, is she still enjoying whatever film festival it is that she came out for? Is she gone already? I can't keep the days straight.
No, she is here until Monday, but I will not see her again until Monday because she and her friends have come in and they stay in Hollywood and they stay at the hotel and they go see movies literally all day. I mean, they had some party last night that they went to, which was apparently very nice. But yeah, it's the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival. It's the 15th year that they've done it. My mom has been to the last five, which is pretty cool. So yeah, it's a nice excuse that she comes out, she comes and sees me. We go out usually for a nice meal on the day she gets here because she and her friends get there the day before it actually starts so that they can, you know, rest up, get acclimated to the time change and all that. So yeah, I go pick them up from the airport, which was nice, in the new car that I had this week. And then we hang out for that day, and then so I'll see her again on Monday before taking them back to the airport too. So it'll be nice.
I like kind of the whole reverse Cats in the Cradle vibe to this, that the boy has grown up and the mom doesn't have time for him. I like this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. That's why I got to go there for Mother's Day and, you know, be a good son. Yeah.
She had enough of you. She had enough of you from the moment you were born until the moment you got the hell out of her house. She's got other things to do with people who at least appreciate fine cinema that was produced before, you know, the year 2010. Okay, let's get to football.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
You saw Josh Allen top of the show. I know it's been a while. You might forget because it's been about 15 minutes. We've been talking about other things, but that's okay. You know, it's Friday. I explained to Chris Sims a couple of weeks ago that because for him, Thursday is Friday. For me, I start to feel like Thursday is Friday. So doing the show on Friday isn't really like even doing the show at all. It's like, oh, hey, it's Saturday morning. Instead of watching cartoons, go up and shoot the breeze for a couple hours. So I'm even looser on Friday than I am, although I've yet to swear it's inevitably coming. Buffalo Bills. They had their first media sessions of the offseason program yesterday. And the big news, obviously, for the Bills, it happened a couple of weeks ago, 16 days now. Stephon Diggs traded to the Houston Texans. Josh Allen, here is what he had to say the first time he spoke to reporters about the team's decision or the players' decision or the mutual decision for Diggs and the Bills to part ways.
Definitely hard to part ways with a guy that's been very instrumental in our success here over the last 4 years. And again, I can't thank him enough for when he came in and how hard he worked and what he taught me along the years. And obviously, I wish we can keep everybody. You know, we've made a lot of changes this offseason, lost a lot of veteran leadership, Steph being one of them. I guess that's the nature of the business. And going into year seven now, it's just kind of is what it is. You know, I don't get paid to make changes on the team. I get paid to be the best quarterback that I can be and try to lead the guys on this team. With this, there is a lot of opportunity for our guys that are in that room right now and as an offense and really as a team to evolve and grow and become a new version of the Buffalo Bills and to come together as a team over the course of OTAs is what we're doing right now. And, you know, we got a lot of time before we kick off the first game, so a lot to learn from.
You know, one of the realizations of any quarterback who performs at a sufficiently high level that he's confident he's going to have a career that lasts 10, 15 years, guys are going to come and go. Patrick Mahomes went through that with Tyreek Hill. He's going to go through it with Travis Kelce. He's going to go through it with every receiver currently on the team and every receiver that replaces them and maybe another generation of receivers beyond that. You are the common thread that spans literally decades. And that's what Josh Allen is. And he's entering year seven. And there's an urgency, surely for him and presumably for the Bills, to make something happen while they still have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And they're kind of tearing it down a little bit with the intent to build it up. We'll talk more coming up very soon about what they'll be doing to build it up. But I think this is part of the maturity of Josh Allen, that he understands it's not his role to make these decisions. And at some point, Stephon Diggs was leaving and he was staying. It was happening at some point. It just happened to be now.
Yeah, what was really interesting to me about Josh Allen talking yesterday and watching that press conference is that you just get the sense that the Bills are turning things over to him a little bit more when it comes to leadership of the team. I mean, because he sort of mentioned it right there. You know, it wasn't just Stephon Diggs that left the team that was one of these veteran leaders. You got Mitch Morse, longtime center. You know, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, two stalwarts of that defense. You got other veterans too that left. Leonard Floyd, one of those guys. You know, Trey White, another one of those guys, not on the team anymore. And I know that he's been hurt for a lot of the last few years, but you just have to now say, okay, this is truly Josh Allen's franchise. And it's not necessarily that it wasn't that before, but he's really embracing, I feel like, that role of leadership. Like, everything is going to go through me. And I want that as a franchise quarterback. That's what he's being paid to do, right? I mean, you mentioned it at the top of the show. Like, it's, you know, you got guys that are pretty much supposed to be management, you know, and they have to be a part of the leadership group that leads the franchise. And I think Josh Allen is really embracing that now going into year seven. And I think the Bills understand that if they're going to be successful, pretty much everything has to run through Josh Allen.
And that's the way it's been. It's been between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, that's pretty much all they have. Well, now they don't have Stephon Diggs. And four of the five receivers from 2023 are gone. And they're rebuilding this position. And everybody knows they're rebuilding the position. One of the things that we said after Stephon Diggs was traded is that the Bills now enter the draft with a blinking red light. We are looking for receivers starting with the 28th overall pick in the draft, which presumably compels them to trade up at the right time to get the guy they want, because if they stay put, they're going to get jumped by somebody who guesses right as to which receiver they are waiting to have slide down to them. One of the strategies for pushing back against that, I believe, came from Brandon Bean yesterday, GM of the team, talking about not having a number one receiver on the roster and not necessarily needing one, i.e., don't feel like we failed if we come out of the draft without a number one receiver. Here's Bean explaining that dynamic from yesterday.
Listen, you'd love to have two guys out there that are number ones. You know what I mean? Or like, you're always going to try to find the best players you can. No, you need – what you need are guys that, in this offense, that are smart, versatile, selfless, and – can make the plays that their skill set allows them to make. And if it's a tall guy that's going to, you know, Josh is going to throw up a 50-50 ball, he's got to come down with it. If it's a guy that we want to get the ball in his hands, and when we need some rack, he's going to do that. I think that's what we're looking for. You know, if there's a one that pops up either in, you know, free agency or draft that makes sense for us, or a really good two, you know, we'll do it. But I don't think having a one or not having a one, Matt, doesn't mean we can't have success, you know, on offense or as a team.
I like the move by Brandon Bean with the second cough to cover the tell that came from the first cough as he was trying to
Body language expert, Mike Florio.
For our number one receiver. Indeed. Honed by years of studying jurors very carefully while they were being selected for the cases that I handled. Not the cases in which I was the defendant, but the cases in which I represented one of the two parties. You have to scrutinize the jury very carefully, and if need be, maybe you intimidate them once or twice. Okay. Has nothing to do with anything that's going on in the world now. As to Brandon Bean, the Chiefs have gone through this with the trade of Tyreek Hill, and now the Bills are going through this. And I think this is the slow creep of the running back mindset toward the receiver position. We've seen it over the past few years. Plenty of great receivers enter the NFL ready to go, plug and play. Why? Because they've been catching passes their whole life. Why? Because of all the 7-on-7 cams aimed at getting the most out of quarterbacks. Why else? Oh, they're throwing the ball like never before in college and high school. So all those passes that are thrown are being caught. Guys are ready to go. And it gets back to, I think, one of the chicken and the egg questions from the 80s before you were born. The decade of plenty of great, but also plenty of really, really bad movies. The Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, who made who? Does the receiver make the quarterback? Does the quarterback make the receiver? And I think what happens is a great quarterback helps make a receiver. Now, it helps to have a great receiver. Great quarterback makes a great receiver even greater. But when you have a quarterback who's got the kind of arm that Josh Allen has, you don't have to be Tyreek Hill. You don't have to be one of the best who ever played to have an impact. Look at Khalil Shakir, who kind of emerged as the number one guy. You know, they don't need a number one receiver to replace Stephon Diggs. They need somebody to replace his production. And by the second half of the year, the production wasn't there. And he wasn't being doubled. That was one of the issues that came up at one point. Oh, you know, well, I get doubled all the time. And Justin Reed of the Chiefs, in response to our story on X, said, we didn't double him. So you don't have the same shoes to fill. The Chiefs had the Tyreek Hill in his prime shoes to fill. And the Bills aren't going to say this, but they don't have that same burden. So you really don't need to go out and get number one. And it would have been great to have Brandon Bean say, well, you know, by the end, Steph really wasn't a number one. So we don't really need, if we're replacing him, we're not really replacing a number one. So it's funny because I just felt like this was inevitable. I didn't know when it was going to come, but you saw what was happening last season and it just wasn't there anymore. And if you're going to get anything of real value for Stephon Diggs, you better do it now, because I don't think it was going to get any better in Buffalo. Maybe it'll help to have a new change of scenery in Houston, but I don't think 2024, especially with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator, because the pivot from production to not much production came when Brady took over for Ken Dorsey. I don't think it was going to be any better. I think they made the right move. And in hindsight, they should have made the move after the blow up last June, because the cap consequences at the end of the day were identical.
I don't know if I would have said that then. I mean, maybe. You did have Sean McDermott talking about he was, you know, very concerned about Stephon Diggs in the middle of June, which we still don't quite know what that was about. And I give the Bills some credit for taking the high road this week, you know, when they're talking to the media about this trade and all that. But it's interesting to me, some of the words that some of the guys used in those press conferences yesterday. I mean, just listening to Brandon Bean right there when he's talking about, oh, what do you need out of receivers? He used the word selfless. And that's like, you don't necessarily have to believe that that was a bit of a dart throw at Stephon Diggs, if you will. But I mean, it's also not, you know. And then I also thought it was interesting that Josh Allen did say, you know, I give Stephon Diggs so much credit for helping me become the quarterback that I am today. But also something that I thought was very telling was that he said after the trade, he sent a text to Stephon Diggs and he got one back. And that's about it. And that's just really interesting to me, man. I mean, you're talking about two people who seem thick as thieves, especially in the beginning part of their partnership. I mean, they were playing video games and whatever. They were on the headset together and all this. And then for whatever reason, their partnership broke down. And if you have that kind of consequential trade and all you're doing is sending a text, like, man, that is very, very telling about the state of their relationship, at least to me, right? And, you know, Josh Allen is saying, well, I got to say something to him, so I might as well text him. And you can't pick up the phone and call him. I got to FaceTime him. You send a text. That's pretty much why, you know, that things were not going to go well with Stephon Diggs and the Bills anymore. The relationship had just broken down between QB and receiver.
Really, in hindsight, the moment was the gesticulating that was done by Stephon Diggs toward Josh Allen on the sideline of the 27-10 yes. loss at home to the Cincinnati Bengals in the 2022 divisional round. There's just a certain element of respect, mutual respect, that needs to happen. And as it turns out, and this is the thing that sparked a big argument between Chris Sims and me 15 days ago now.
Oh, boy.
Josh Allen just sat there and took it. And at some point, the quarterback can't take it. Well, the quarterback opted not to do it in public. And there was the report that emerged after the fact that after the week one loss to the Jets in overtime, where Allen had multiple turnovers and the Bills clearly should have won the game easily because Aaron Rodgers lasted four whole plays before yielding to Zach Wilson, that all the players were coming up to Josh Allen to wish him well after the game and, you know, get him next time or whatever the appropriate thing to say is. But whatever the appropriate thing to say is, Stephon Diggs didn't say it because it caused Josh Allen to snap and say, it's one effing game. So there was a bridge that was obliterated that was never going to be rebuilt. And I remember when the thing happened at mandatory minicamp, you alluded to it. Stephon Diggs left. Everyone's here except Stephon, and I'm very concerned about him. And they create the impression that he disappeared, that he ran out of the building, that he's just gone. Oh, and then we find out the next day they told him to leave. Slightly different vibe. Slightly mm-hmm. different vibe than Stephon just, you know, had an episode and disappeared. Because I remember spending that day thinking, well, does anybody know where he is? Is he okay? Like, what's yes. going on here? They yes. really hung a negative connotation on him with all that stuff. And in the aftermath of that, when I started kicking around the idea maybe they should just trade him, the pushback was, the cap hit they'll take next year is crippling, because after June 1, you don't take any additional acceleration. You just take whatever bonus proration is already going to apply for that year. You don't get the avalanche, potentially, of cap charge. It's all pushed off to the next year. Well, that's what happened this year by trading him before June 1. They took the exact same cap hit this year they would have taken if they had traded him last year in June, which was the big reason why they didn't do it. So I just think they recognized we got to get through this season. They reached a tenuous truce with him last year. They got through the season, and then they realized they were going to move on. And I think they planned it from the moment the season ended. They were going to move on. They waited for the right time. They got more than they could have gotten, I think, from anyone else. And the Texans welcome him. And let's pivot to the Texans side of this. We've got more to talk about as it relates to the Bills, but Nick Caserio, the GM of the team that traded for Stephon Diggs, spoke yesterday. Here's his take on the diva label that has been applied to Stephon Diggs over the course of his career.
Yeah, number one, I don't even know what that definition means. So if someone can define that for me, again, like, we're not worried about, you know, again, we're worried about what a player does when he walks in our building. So we do our research. We talk to our players. We talk to other players all the time. We talk to our players, you know, as an example, like a lot of the guys are in the draft. You know, we talk to those players. Hey, what are your thoughts about so-and-so? Candidly, I think it's unfair to label anybody until they actually have an opportunity to walk in the building. again, our environment's different than another environment. So we really don't know what's going on in 31 other buildings. We know what's going on in our building.
Okay, first of all, his explanation is perfectly acceptable, but don't play dumb right out of the gates. You know what it means. You've been around football for a long time, Nick. You know what it means when somebody says a diva receiver. I don't even know what that means. I mean, come on. That's not the way to cleanse the palate. I understand he's trying to set a new stage for Stephon Diggs, but I'll say what I said when the Bills traded for Stephon Diggs. Beware, because the guy who decided he wanted a divorce from the team that he was already on is potentially going to decide he wants a divorce from you. That this is somebody who's never going to be completely happy unless he gets everything he wants. And that's what the diva receiver is. The diva receiver wants everything. I want to win. I want the ball. And why do I want the ball? I want the ball because I completely and totally believe that us winning flows from me getting the ball. I want the ball. You give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, and we're going to win, we're going to win, we're going to win. And if those things don't happen, that's when the diva receiver starts to pout, starts to confront people on the sideline, starts to throw his helmet, starts to act up. And now there are plenty of receivers who don't act that way. And there was a trend, I think, like with A.J. Green and Julio Jones, Larry Fitzgerald before them, where it wasn't all about, hey, look at me, look at me. And I don't know whether or not the receiver creates that the position creates the mindset or attracts guys who have that mindset. But there's a lot of diva receivers out there who attach some greater significance to what they do and believe that the path to victory includes giving them the ball on every single play. So, and I'm not saying Stephon Diggs is like that, but we see flashes of it, and I think it's driven by his intense desire to win. And it gets back to what I said. When the team is struggling and I'm not getting the ball, it supports this idea, if you would just get me the ball, we would win. And I think that's what he carries around, and he's going to carry it with him to Houston.
He will, but at least Houston only has him under contract for 1 year, right? This is the all-in mindset that the Texans are showing that they have without telling us that they have the all-in mindset, because it makes a lot of sense when you have a quarterback who is on the verge of elite and he is going into his second season, right? I mean, that is a very, very affordable quarterback to have. So that's why you can continue to build your team around him. And that's what makes this a risk worth taking for the Houston Texans. I mean, now, when it comes to Nick Caserio and saying, I don't know what diva is, it would have been better if he just quoted Beyonce. And he's like, well, the definition of diva I know is that it's a female version of a hustler. But other than that, that's not Stephon Diggs. So he can come into our building and he can do whatever else he wants, right? And we know that he is a talented guy and we can get him the ball and that's going to help us win. But it's interesting because with Stephon Diggs, and we showed the numbers a little bit earlier of what it was first 10 games versus last however many games last year, where his targets went down, you know, his production went down as a whole. I mean, it's one of those things where you could say, well, is Stephon Diggs still that guy where you can argue, okay, you get me the ball, we're going to have success? Because most of the Bills' success last year came when they weren't getting Steph Diggs the ball all the time. So I don't know. I mean, does that mean that Steph Diggs is washed? I don't think so. He still had over 1,000 yards last year. I think 8 touchdowns and all that. It doesn't mean that he's incapable of being a really good receiver. And especially in that offense with that QB, you know, and you've got all the players that he's got around him, I think that skill group is certainly better than the one that he's leaving. I mean, and, you know, we can argue about what quarterback, blah, 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 and offensive scheme and all that. But I think that there is a real chance for Stephon Diggs to be very productive in this Houston offense. Now, does that mean he's going to get 110 catches, 1,500 yards as he was, you know, peak Buffalo Bills days? I don't think so. But I still think he can get 80 and 1,000. I don't think that that's sort of out of the question. Is that going to be enough for him? That's the real big question there.
Well, and he did end up with more than 1,000 yards, and he did have a bunch of touchdowns, but the production tailed off dramatically. He didn't have a 100-yard receiving game after week 6. So it is entirely possible that the diva, as you defined it, ultimately became a scrub. And as you know, a scrub is a guy that thinks he's fly and also is known as a buster, thanks to TLC. I mean, if you're going to quote Beyonce, I'll quote TLC. We can go all day with that.
That's good.
Anyway, I saw Stephon Diggs reacting negatively on X, I believe, if I recall this correctly, when they were suggesting he's the number three receiver in Houston now. And you know what, Steph, we love you, but there's a chance that's how it's going to play out. There's a chance that when it's time for C.J. Stroud to deliver the footballs, you're not going to get the lion's share of the targets. And when Chris and I got off the rails 15 days ago, I reminded him of one of the great Warren Moon, Chris Carter stories, that Chris Carter tried all that, you know, I'm open, throw me the ball on Warren Moon back in the early 90s. And Warren Moon said, if you ever do that again, I will never throw another pass to you for as long as we're both on this team. And that shut it down. And that was the genesis of the argument that Josh Allen needs to take control of the relationship. And maybe the reality is they tried everything they could. They tried to tolerate because he's a great player. Right. We're going to try to make this work. We're going to try to make this work. And I think it's a combination of we've tried everything and we saw the revolution, not evolution, of the change from Dorsey to Brady and what that meant to Stephon Diggs. And my lasting memory of Diggs in Buffalo will be the play before the missed field goal in the divisional round loss to the Chiefs, where Diggs was running open underneath, and Josh Allen didn't even look his way. He fired the ball to Khalil Shakir in the end zone, and he got hit just as he was throwing it. Otherwise, it would have been a touchdown, and it might have been another epic finish to a divisional round game between the Bills and the Chiefs. But they could have gotten the first down easily because Diggs was wide open, and he didn't even look his way. So, you know, this feels like it was a long time coming. So now, as we heard Allen earlier, plenty of changes on the roster. Both Allen and Brandon Bean yesterday addressed the reality that there are roster changes, and you know there's always going to be roster changes, but it seems like a lot for the Bills. Here's Bean and Allen talking about that.
You know, like anything, change is not always bad. Change can be hard when you've had the stability we've had at some of the positions, and a lot of those guys, you know, were captains. So is that uneasy? Yeah, it is, but sometimes your team has to evolve. It's probably the best word I can do it. And we do feel there are some guys currently on the roster that can ascend into some leadership roles. Is it going to be where, you know, the guys that left off? No, but hopefully we can grow them, and that's part of the development of our organization.
It's just another opportunity for me to go out there and be the guy that I'm supposed to be and the guy that I believe I am. And you know, I'm going to need guys along the way, but I think the most important thing that I need from this team is guys to just continue to work hard and buy into what we're doing here and trust the process, as Coach McDermott always preaches, and, you know, us trusting in being in what he's doing and bringing the right guys in, and just trying to utilize those guys as best as we can.
One of the things we discuss as we get closer and closer to the moment where the schedule is revealed for all teams, and I think this applies to the Bills particularly this year. Early season schedule is going to be critical for them because they're going to be working their way toward whatever it is they're going to be in 2024. They need a few easy games. They need a few of the checkmark games on their schedule early to try to build some confidence and some momentum with all these changes. You know, some teams end up with murderer's row right out of the gates. Sometimes it comes later. Sometimes it's spread out. But for the Bills, you got to cross your fingers and hope. If you're a Bills fan, there's two or three easy games in the first four or five where this new look team can get its footing heading into the tougher part of the season.
Oh, man. But Mike, what is easy, right? I mean, you know, any given Sunday, it's a whole movie I've never seen, right? Or anything can happen, you know, because things can. Yeah, I know. Well, then things happen between the white lines. Anything can happen. I mean, we talked about the fact that they lost to the Jets in week one. That should have been an easy game. But unfortunately, when Josh Allen is turning the ball over, things that look easy become very difficult. And so that's the thing where it's like, okay, if Josh Allen is really going to take this next step forward that they are putting on him, right? And he alluded to, you know, I don't need blah, blah, blah. I just need guys to, you know, come with us and buy into what we're doing and make sure that they're putting their best foot forward, la, 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 la. Like, that's great. Like, I think that that's exactly what Josh Allen should be saying at this time of year. And they need guys to continue to buy in, just as he was saying. But execution, that's the thing that is going to make or break whatever the Bills can be. Because if Josh Allen is going to be a turnover machine, then the Bills aren't going to be that successful. And the Bills have shown that they can come back and that they can do whatever they need to do to be successful. You know, when their backs are against the wall, they did that last year, you know, after the quote unquote hit piece came out on Sean McDermott, they rallied around him. They played good football. They made it to the playoffs as the two seed. They won that division. So they have a history of being able to play and being able to execute when their backs are against the wall. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying about, you know, yeah, you want that soft early schedule. Everybody does. You want to be able to bank wins as much as you possibly can. But I don't know that it's so essential to their success, right? Because like I said, they know that they can come back and it's a different group of people. Yeah. But once you put things on Josh Allen's back, he's shown that as long as he's not turning the ball over, he can get it done for you whenever it happens to be.
Well, they just need to have a very well-timed, they need to have a well-timed hit piece come out about Sean McDermott and then have the reaction to that propel the team forward at a time when it felt like they were going to miss the playoffs altogether.
That I do wonder what would have happened if that piece didn't come out.
Well, because they're all looking for something they can manufacture into a chip on their shoulder. Some basis for being salty and upset and let's bring everyone together. They're looking and searching and hoping. And then this gift comes out of nowhere. And it galvanizes the Bills and it allows them to really turn it around to the point where it's like, is this the year they're going to get to the Super Bowl? The year they were left for dead, especially after that Monday night debacle against the Broncos, that they're going to actually get to the Super Bowl for the first time since the early 90s. So, yeah, you need something like that. Now, maybe you need something like that because you've got a bunch of internal dysfunction because this Stephon Diggs thing is just something that hadn't solved itself and you clear the decks and you don't need some external boost this year. And I mentioned the schedule. There aren't a lot of easy games. In addition to their six division games against the Jets, the Patriots, and the Dolphins, they've got all the teams of the AFC South, which is not a collection of road apples anymore. All those teams could be very good this year. They play all the teams of the NFC West. The Cardinals showed promise late in the year. The Rams were unexpectedly good. The 49ers are the 49ers, and the Seahawks are going to have a kick in the pants from having a new head coach. They also, by virtue of winning the division week 18 against the Dolphins, they get to play the Chiefs again. They get to play the Lions in Detroit. They've also got the Ravens, another division winner. So it's going to be a tough schedule wire to wire for the Buffalo Bills. And look, there's just been this question hovering of what is the thing that's going to cause widespread change in the organization so they get more out of the career of Josh Allen. There was a presumption once it became clear he was going to be a great quarterback that he's going to take them back to the Super Bowl inevitably. And we're now, as Josh said in the clip we played earlier, in year seven, and they haven't made it. And they haven't been to the AFC Championship since 2020. So there is pressure, I think. It all comes down to what ownership wants to do. But at some point in Josh Allen's career, a reboot is going to be necessary, and we'll all know when that time comes. And we felt like it was coming last year, and just when it got as dark as we thought it could get, it turned around for the Bills. And it may go that way again. Maybe that's what they need to do. Maybe they just need to be backs against the wall and fight their way out of it. But that's not a way to do it because you don't want to have no margin for error. You want to be great all season long. But look, last year's Super Bowl champion. As of Christmas Day, we were like, they're washed. Like, they're done. It's over. The Chiefs aren't the Chiefs anymore. So as long as you have a great quarterback, you got a chance. But if you don't cash in with the great quarterback, at some point, you know, by the middle of his career, that's when people start thinking maybe we need to do things differently. And that's what's going to hover over Sean McDermott until the Bills get to a Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, and that like you said, I mean, they need to just get back to the AFC Championship game. I mean, yeah, I understand that the Chiefs have been a bugaboo. You know, the Bengals also have when they're healthy. They have more trouble, it seems like, playing against the Bengals than they do playing against the Chiefs. I mean, they beat the Chiefs, the Bills do, in the regular season. It's just in the playoffs, 15 becomes the Grim Reaper, and that's just who he is. And that's, you know, the way they've played, especially the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I don't know what it's going to take for Buffalo to get over that hump. But, you know, when you get younger and when you have this sort of reboot, you know, that they're doing at least with the roster this year, and you put more on Josh Allen to be the leader of the franchise as opposed to one of the leaders of the franchise, maybe that's the ingredient, maybe, or the missing piece, whatever you want to call it, that they've not had yet, that then they can push through. I don't know if that's what it's going to take or not, but that's what they're trying now.
The key, though, is the thing that they were looking for years, a great quarterback. They got him in the 2018 draft, a year that also brought us Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, who still might turn it around in Minnesota this year. You never know.
Yeah, okay.
But
good luck
that
with
was
that.
A year. Now, really, you know, Bills fans, this never really comes up. The Bears get dragged for not taking Patrick Mahomes because they took Mitch Trubisky. But the Bills had the 10th pick in the draft in 2017 and traded it to the Chiefs. They had a clear shot to Patrick Mahomes, and they didn't take him. So, yeah, but they do have Josh Allen, and the Commanders now in a position to get their franchise quarterback. When we return, an explanation from the folks in charge in Washington as to why they had this four-man square dance of top quarterback prospects in on the same day. And also some things I've been picking up as I've been working the phones to try to figure out which of these quarterbacks is going to be taken when and by whom. We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta, because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members, because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.